12 o'clock. This is EAA Radio Live. I'm Farid Guillot. Steve Bust is with me, and joining us now is Art Knowles, who owns the only civilian Harrier. And why would you want to get a hold of a really loud leaf blower?
Well, I just love the airplane. I had a chance in the military to fly about 70, 75 different types of type model series of airplanes, from A-4s, F-16s, F-15s, a little bit of everything that the Air Force had and that the Marine Corps had. And of all of those, the Harrier was my absolute favorite aircraft. And once I retired from the Marine Corps, I went into another line of business that didn't involve aviation. I was a real estate developer in Washington, D.C., but I realized it didn't take long to realize that my heart was in aviation. I needed to find a way to get back into it. So I entered the air show circuit with a Russian Yak-3 aircraft, which always seemed to have some problems. It was a love-hate with relationship. And then went from there to an L-39, which is a beautiful airplane. But I realized that one of the top air show draws was the U.S. Marine Corps Harrier. They get more requests each year for the Harrier than the Thunderbirds and the Blue Angels combined. Everybody wants it because it can land in a parking lot for a supermarket opening or whatnot. And I said, this is a financial opportunity waiting to happen. There's something that I could do some things in the airplane that the current military can't do. We do some flyovers for sporting events and other things like that. So I looked for one that was going to be sold surplus in the UK, British Sea Harrier. I found one that was complete, was intact, and arranged with the aircraft broker to get the airplane purchased and shipped over here to the U.S., and then the real hard work started. It took about 2.5 years to get the airplane flight ready and ready for FAA certification, and before they signed us off and allowed us to go for the first flight.
That airplane has a serious fuel-to-noise ratio.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of research went into looking at operating costs of an airplane, not just because of the fuel, but of operating a military aircraft as unique as this?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of costs with it, and the cost for spare parts ranges all the way from scrap metal to solid gold. And the fuel costs are enormous. We didn't even know what the cruise figures were for this airplane, so we're kind of taking some of these things on faith that we could operate it, we could do it safely. But the very first time we started the engine, the fuel truck came over. We put 50 gallons of fuel in it. I said, just put 50 in it. That's just enough to get the fuel galleries wet and all the cavities in the fuel control system wet. The engine started up, and it ran for 11 seconds and flamed out. And I said, this is going to be a very expensive proposition. So we put some more fuel in it. We got through our first couple of flights. And the first cross-country we took was, we were doing it as a data flight, trying to find a real cruise performance the way we're going to fly the airplane. Because we don't fly it up in a Class A airspace. We fly a day VFR, GPS direct, point A to point B. We go about 300 miles on a tank full of fuel. The flight took 45 minutes, and it took 55 minutes for my credit card to clear. And we did the fuel figures, and it was 1.8 gallons per mile.
So I have to ask you, you take this for a $100 hamburger? Do you go to pancake breakfast? It's kind of expensive.
It'd be about a $4,000 hamburger. And then on top of the fuel costs, there are other costs, brakes, tires. And part of the difficulty with this airplane is still listed on the International Trafficking in Arms Regulations, the ITAR. So in order for me to get parts from England, I have to get an export license for everything, including something very minor such as tires. Tires were made by Dunlop. I had to get a license to get four tires. I ordered them in October, and the tires didn't show up till the following February.
So, Art, tell us a little bit about the background of the specific airplane that you're flying.
This airplane, all in all of the Harriers, there were about 45 different variants built, from the original P-1127 to the Kestrel to the GR-1, which the Marine Corps bought off the shelf in 1969 and designated it the AV-8A. 45 different variants, mostly air-to-ground combat support aircraft, what we call attack aircraft in the Marine Corps. The Sea Harrier was built specifically to satisfy the operational requirements of the Royal Navy as a fighter. It made some significant changes over the other Harriers. It had a radar, which was the biggest one. Most of the other Harriers don't have a radar. The AV-8B does now. But in the early days, it didn't. And to be a successful fighter, you have to be able to reach out and touch somebody. You have to be able to see them before they see you. So it had a radar. It was also made out of a different material. It was made out of aluminum, so it would be more corrosion resistant than the regular magnesium that the 88As were made out of. The airplanes looked the same. The Sea Harrier weighs 1,000 pounds more because it's aluminum rather than magnesium. And they also raised the canopy of that, so you got better visibility fore and aft and to the side. All of those differences made this airplane a very formidable fighter. It did very well in the Falklands. They only built 76 of them ever. That's all they ever built. There's twice as many P-51 Mustangs on U.S. registry right now than were ever built of that airplane, so it's a very rare one. That's also the second Sea Harrier ever built. It's the oldest surviving one. The first one actually crashed on some takeoff tests, but that one was used by British Aerospace for flight testing. It did ski jump work, which was they have a ski jump at the bow of a ship, and this airplane was used for that type of testing. And it stayed behind during the Falklands to transition some pilots. They gave them a quick couple flights to refresh in that airplane, then they shipped them off to the Falklands.
So how did you come to find it?
Well, I had read an article in a magazine that the Brits, because they operated both the Sea Harrier and the American-made GR 5, 7, and 9, what we call the AV-8B, they look very similar, but the spare parts aren't the same. The tires are the same size, but they're actually two different types of tires. Things like that. Fasteners a little different. Hydraulic pumps and stuff. Just for commonality of parts and training, they decided we were going to just go with one variant of the Harrier, and they were going to sell all these surplus. And I saw that as an opportunity, because they sell their airplanes a little differently than what we do in the United States. A person in the U.S. can't just buy a tactical airplane. There's no F-16s, no F-18s that are flying. They're always stripped down. The Brits just, they sell them.
Wow. So, like, Trade a plane would in England would have a little different listing than they do here.
A little bit different in that they don't widely advertise how this. So they have a group of trusted agents that buy the surplus, and they have to take the good with the bad.
Okay.
The guy that bought this airplane actually had five or six airplanes, and that was his exact word. I have five or six, and I said, you don't even know how many Harriers you have. And he goes, well, to be honest, you know, some are crashed in the front, some are crashed in the back, one was underwater for 60 days. Some don't have most don't have the engine. So he said they're not really complete airplanes. But he said, I guarantee you, I've got enough to make this a complete, flyable airplane. And based on that guarantee, I said, okay, I will get it. And when we got it over here and asked the Marines to help us to put it together, we found out we were missing some key parts. And I called him, sent him an email, hey, I need this, and he made good on his promise. I got him.
Good. So it's like most other restorations. You get the restoration, it's a basket case, and
yes.
When you put it all together, might be a few things missing.
It's exactly like that. And part of the similarity between this airplane restoration and somebody who's built another aircraft is that you've got a passion for the airplane. You're looking at the end goal and not looking at the multitude of rivets and pieces of aluminum or pieces of wood or whatever you're making the airplane out of. And if you look at the overall task, to anything it looks daunting, and this just is the same way. But we had a saying that we were going to eat the elephant one bite at a time. Let's get together on weekends, let's do a little bit of time and try to take a couple steps forward, and we're learning as we go. So in that sense, it's very, very similar to everybody here who's ever built an airplane.
Now, you said daunting in the restoration. I would think daunting would also be going to the FAA and saying, hi, I have a Harrier.
Back to the purchase question, I came into work, opened my email on a Monday morning. We're 5 hours behind the UK, and I get an email that says we found one, it's complete, it's intact, it looks like it's ready to go, it's going to be sold by Friday. There's another bidder. My first phone call was to the FAA, and I called Ray Stinchcomb, who's the head of Warbirds there, and I said, hey, what's it going to take to get certified in a unique single-seat airplane? And he says, what kind of airplane? I told him it's a Harrier, and he started laughing right on the phone. And he says, okay, tell me your resume. And I went, I flew him for 16 years in the Marine Corps. I had just shy of 1,500 hours. I've flown eight different types of VSTOL aircrafts, including Russian Yak-38 Forger. I was a test pilot in them. I've got over 600 carrier landings. And he said, stop. I'm gonna sign you off, and we'll find a way to get you a learner's permit to fly it, and then we'll go through some sort of examination to make it.
So you have to ride with your dad?
What?
You have a learner's permit, you have to ride with your dad for the first 10 hours?
I had to be watched like a hawk. So that was part of it, and the second part of it was, how do I get insurance for this? So I called my insurance agent, Bob Cannon of Cannon Aviation, and he goes, you know, that's a... nobody's ever asked that before. So it took 2 months and talks with the underwriter to see our background, how we were going to do things, and what we had for spares and stuff like that before they agreed to say we'll insure it. I think we got a question over here on the... Oh, you just said one?
So you've got it. It's here, and you mentioned this is your first time at Oshkosh.
Yeah, this is my very first time. I really have no idea what to expect other than a lot of people. It looks like a sea of people, and I've heard at least four people say, "There's nobody here."
Well, this is definitely a unique year with all the rain and all the arrivals and things that are going on. But one of the things that does make it unique is having you and your airplane here. We're looking forward to seeing you fly. What days are you flying?
I'm flying three times, as far as I know the schedule now. I'm flying Thursday at 3:30. Saturday at 3:30 and Sunday at 2:00.
All right.
And I'm looking forward to it too.
Excellent, excellent. Art, we appreciate you taking time to join us today. You're going to be over at the airplane for a little while.
Absolutely. We're over at the airplane. We've got handouts for the kids. We've got lick 'em and stick 'em tattoos of our little Char character that we have. We have autograph cards. Be glad to sign autographs for people. Take a close look at the airplane, and the crew's over there. I'm over there. We'll all answer your questions.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us again. You're listening to live from the Welcome Center. This is EAA Radio.